live from the rickety little dock where you have to wait for the ferry that'll take you to Little Tall Island, just off the frigid coast of Maine. Man, it's cold out here. Jeez. It's
the Dark Multiverse of Stephen. The Dark Multiverse of The Dark Multiverse of...
Oh, my God. It's the Dark Multiverse of Stephen King, okay?
Okay, let's talk about The Mist.
Let's talk about The Mist.
So we got three things. You've got the original novella that was published first in Dark Forces and then has been republished a million times.
Right.
You've got the movie directed by Frank Darabont.
Well, it was also in Skeleton Crew, wasn't it?
Yes, in some places.
Yeah, the beginning.
His first appearance was in Dark Forces.
Right, by Collie's itself.
Incredible horror anthology, way back when.
Oh, do you own this?
Yeah, I do.
I would like to borrow it, please, for the bathtub night.
Yeah, it's great. And 30 years old now, probably.
Really?
Yeah, but it was amazing. And then the movie version that was done, directed by Frank Darabont.
I love Frank.
Terrific. And then most recently last year, there was a miniseries based on The Mist that you and I, that's how we first started doing this.
Podcasting.
We did a big complicated recap of each of the, was it 10 episodes?
I don't fucking know. It was an eternity. And I'm not sighing when I say the word podcasting because I really enjoy this shit. And I enjoy all of you who might be listening, but I do not enjoy how we got into this shit.
Yeah, well, it was a rough beginning. Okay, people, get in here, huddle up. As we remind you every Galdern week, the Dark Multiverse of Stephen King is all about the spoilers. All of them. All the time. So if you haven't read the novella or seen the movie or watched the television series, well, hold off on the television series till after you've heard what we have to say. But if you haven't seen the movie or read the story, stop right here and go do that. You'll thank me in the morning. And if you go ahead anyway, well, to quote my dear old daddy on my 18th birthday, Sun Yon Yon. Actually, he didn't say that at all. He was a great guy. But anyway, onward.
But I love The Mist. Okay, don't get me wrong. It's the show,
When he first wrote it, novellas, though, they've always been around in this genre. It wasn't a very well-respected or well-published group because there was no place to put them.
It was like a brush off the shoulder.
Well, you couldn't make any money.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a professional writer...
You got like $5-6.
Yeah.
You got, for the book, not to you.
Of one time only from a fantasy and science fiction or one of the very, very and decreasing number of science fiction.
And it's not like he thought he was going to write or win any awards with that one.
Right.
Or they would
get noticed. It would only get a fraction of his normal audience would read it
because
they read the novels. So that was one reason alone that it was unusual that he did that. But I think it's one of the best things, tightest, smartest things he's ever done.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And I love both the novella and I fucking love the movie, which we are, again, in bed in our PJs watching together as we're talking about this. It is so good because there's so many details that follow the novella, but it's so fantastic to see it through Frank Darabont's vision. And also just to literally see something that you've imagined as many times as I've read that book over and over and over again, because it's nice, short, sweet, and to the point. I can be in one bath and read it and be out of the bath and go to sleep. It's so good. And the characters are...
Strangely, the thing I like least about it, I mean, I like all the Walking Dead people that are great. Thomas Jane, who is the lead male, I love everything this guy's done.
And I also love all the Shawshank people.
He did The Punisher. He did a movie, The Punisher. He was excellent. He did still is doing The Expanse on sci-fi.
That guy.
Completely different. Yeah, that guy. Right. He did another Stephen King. He did
1922. Dude, okay, I forgot. When we watch that, which we will do on a later date because, my God, I loved All right.
And then the wife in that one on.
I didn't realize that was the same guy.
Yeah, I know. He looks very different all the time.
It's crazy.
He's really good, so I like that. The one I don't like is Gay Harden.
You don't like her?
No, I don't think she's nearly batshit crazy enough in this.
Oh, as Mrs. Carmody, you don't think she's crazy as she was written?
Yeah. I envisioned her to be much...
like there's another old woman in the much older than Martin in this who's one of the nice ladies.
Right.
That's what I think. Oh,
the Hattie character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I think.
In my mind's eye, I imagined from Mrs. Carmody with her strange store of oddities and whatnot, and the, you know, just weird kind of witchy thing that she had about her. I imagined a woman with a bun that had hairs kind of just flying all over the place and whatever. I imagined someone that kind of looked crazy on the outside. The thing I like about the movie version of it is this woman looks put together.
Yeah.
Even Steffi, the wife, when David leaves his house, does not look as well put together. She looks as well put together as the lady that David ends up having the little affair with. And what's her name? I can't remember. Amanda, that's her name. So Amanda is very well coiffed and put together. Everything's nice. And that's how Marcia Gay Harding looks in this. So that's what I like about the movie version is she doesn't look like you need to be suspicious of her, and that's what makes her terrifying in this. Plus, it's Marcia Gay Harding, and she's fantastic.
Okay, The Mist has a long and storied history. It was first published in 1980 in, as I say elsewhere, the incredibly original horror anthology called Dark Forces, edited by Kirby McCauley. This collection had new, at the time, stories by everybody from King to Ray Bradbury to Richard Matheson to Ted Sturgeon to Clifford Simak, all the way to friggin' Joyce Carol Oates and Isaac Bashevis Singer. Seriously. Impossibly enough, it's out of print. But you can get super cheap, like under $3, copies of it on Amazon in hardcover and paperback format. And it's also literally too old to have an ebook version, so forget that. Clearly there is no God. Anyway, The Mist was such a hit, it was also included in Skeleton Crew, King's short story collection, in 1985, then published as a standalone paperback in 2007. Though you can get a lot more of King for your buck if you get Skeleton Crew for about the same price. The 2007 movie cost about $18 million to make and grossed over $52 million in foreign and domestic, not to mention a couple of gazillion in DVD and VOD sales since then. It's available to rent or buy on Amazon Prime for as little as $2.99, but it's not currently on Netflix or Shudder or anywhere else. And the 2017 series is available on Netflix, though, again, listen to our whole piece before you waste any of your time or money there. It's also available as an audiobook, which I haven't listened to, but it's read by Will Patton, who's a terrific actor and did an incredible job on the audiobook of The Outsider, so I bet it's great. Let us know if it is, okay? But any way you look at it, The Mist is a low-cost investment for a great return, at least 3 times out of 4.
There's a scene in the original novella that's one of the ones that still sticks with me of all the King stuff, which is they're back in the loading dock, and the tentacle comes through there, wraps around the
Norm
huge,
the bag boy. Oh, yeah, first the dog food?
The dog food, where it squeezes so tight it explodes.
I know.
I don't know why, but that scene is such a wonderful combination of the completely impossible and the completely commonplace.
Yes.
And I just
I know, you're absolutely right. There's something about that where it's like, I still remember that very clearly, just in my mind. And I've never had a dog until recently, and except for when I was a kid. And I just imagine this crazy tentacle that I can barely imagine, but dog food scattered everywhere like you do when you miss the bowl by a little bit. And it just kind of goes all over the kitchen floor, you know? And it's like, it's everywhere.
And I think that encapsulates King's true genius. The reason that so many people like him is able to take real commonplace images like that, like spilled dog food, and connect it to something horrific and huge. And so now it has so much more power than just being the Lovecraftian, you know, horrible dark thing that makes you scared, or
and you can't imagine
historical
thing
like the vampire. It's here and now.
It's here and now, and that's, I think, what Stephen King does in every, you know, the things that I write, the things that you've written, the things that he writes. I mean, not that, you know, bow down to Stephen King, but I'm just saying, like, we love him to death. But what I love the most about that kind of writing is you take something that, if you explained it to a friend, sounds ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Okay, so some tentacles come under a thing and they grab a thing of dog food and they just like pull it apart, and it's like, why would that be scary? But when you know King, when you know the author that you're reading, you know that it's like, you just took something very ordinary and made it terrifying. It's just magic.
Yeah, it happens again. And in they don't unfortunately do the tentacle dog food exploding scene in the movie.
They don't.
But they do duplicate the scenes in the pharmacy with the spiders.
Yes, they did a great job with
kind of is the same thing. It's like, this is a normal, everyday-looking pharmacy. It's like we go into every day. And yet this one's infested with huge, grotesque spiders.
I gotta pop my knuckles on that one. And I could have done without the guy being strung up and having the spiders just explode out of him. Yeah. I could have done without that.
I liked it
a lot. I liked it better in the book because it wasn't as spiderific. I didn't need that much spideriness.
Not that much spideriness. But the last and largest question is the ending.
That's the biggest part about The Mist, which is why we are here right now with you. Let's all talk about this, because I want to know, when I was reading the novella, I would get so frustrated because there's certain stories by any author, Stephen King included, that I like being able to make up my own ending. I do enjoy that to a certain extent, but there's other ones that I need satisfaction. I need to have my big O, you know, I need the finale.
Yeah.
I need it to be told to me, and I want it done, and I want it satisfactory at least. The novella gives you hope, because that's the actual last words of it. You know, I thought I heard words on the radio. It sounded like Hartsfield. To me, it sounded like hope.
Yeah.
And I haven't read that novella in years, but I'll tell you, I remember that exactly, because it just felt so good, like they were going to make it.
I agree.
Okay, I'll let you talk about the book part first, and then I'm going to do the big butts with the movie.
Let's be honest. King's weakest thing is his endings.
Okay, that's true.
There are a number of books that have had really not all, but awful endings.
We've gone through the Dome and
the Stand. Yeah. But it's always been the biggest challenge, and frankly, it is in writing a novel in general, coming up with an ending that's as good as the beginning and the middle, that ties everything up satisfactorily, but isn't too pat and simple. It's real hard, and he doesn't succeed a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But there is a value that he recognizes in ambiguity. So, like the ending of Salem's Lot, which I really like. It's where
the town burns down, too.
But you've got the boy and the man.
And they're strong, and they're going to Mexico to visit the priest. The
So it's an ambiguous open ending. Not every that single
open
character
ending I liked.
You end up in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing in Cujo is that we do find out what happens to the boy and the mom at the end. But in the book, not talk about the movie, there it goes on. We found out more about what happens to the characters.
Do you see
afterwards.
What's going and on in my head? It's ellipsis with a question mark.
Yeah. But I liked the ambiguity of The Mist ending in the novella, because it left it open not only just for further stories, but to me the realistic idea that not everybody in that supermarket would die in that supermarket.
Right.
That there's more story to be told.
Wait, do you mean by David and the crew leaving?
Yeah, they're going, and,
that there'd be like
you realize the whole
like finding other people
were
or something.
That were underneath the salt shaker left in a diner, and that they were going off now to continue. I just thought that was a great way,
which I liked in Cell, kind of that they did sort of that thing.
Same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really, and I think that there are times when that ambiguity that
works
open,
so
open
much.
Works.
It works, yes,
but that doesn't work so well in movies, maybe because we experienced them in a much tighter frame.
I had people that were booing in it because they didn't, obviously they're not Stephen King fans. I had so many people around me booing, and they were pissed when it said chapter one. They thought there was going to be a nice neat ending, and I was like, obviously none of you saw the miniseries. It was 3 days, and like,
there are only two possible endings, right?
Yeah.
Either the kids die, or four kids all by themselves, first time out of the bag, beat an ancient evil that's destroyed this town.
There's more. The Losers Club is what, seven?
Yeah, seven. Yeah. Only four, five, whatever.
You're thinking of the adult version. All right, let's move on.
But anyway,
stop spoiling it for me.
That open endedness worked, you know. But people do have a harder time in movies that don't end.
Right.
Don't give you a good solid ending, even if you have something at the end after the credits that said to be continued. They want the arc to end.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which brings us to the
Movie.
What did you think of?
I fucking loved it. I'll tell you right up. I absolutely loved the ending of this. I thought it was so fantastic because, all right, the thing I love about Richard Bachman more than I love about Stephen King is you get just as attached to all the characters. He's just as equally developed with bringing you in to loving them or hating them or whatever, but you still care about them, and then murdering all of them. So this was a very Richard Bachman ending to me, where it was basically, I'm going to fucking kill everyone, and then I'm going to try to kill myself, but I can't. So I'm going to get the monsters to kill me. But guess what?
The army shows up.
The army shows up with the lady that he would not walk home, who's Melissa McBride, the lady who plays Carol in The Walking Dead, who I fucking love, and that's how she got the job doing this. because Darabont said to the casting lady, you've got to try this woman. She's fantastic. And she is. She's so lovely and so badass. So she's there with her two kids that were at home alone with the army coming through the smoke. And he has just murdered his son, the woman that he slept with while he thought his wife was dead, which she is. Hattie, yeah, and everybody that he cared about anymore is all murdered.
Yep. It's a wonderfully...
It's so good. I'm so...
Dark and appropriate. Delicious. Ending to me. Because if they'd gone out, gone through all that, and he'd waited just a minute longer, and then the soldiers had rolled up...
I would have been so pissed off.
Oh, great. Happy ending. Yay.
I would have been writing mean letters.
So much better. Usually I'm the one that bitches and moans when they deviate from the source material.
Why buy it if
you're
going to
change it? We're going to fuck with it. But in this case, the ending was 180 degrees from the ending in the book, but I think better because of it. This episode of The Dark Multiverse of Stephen King is brought to you by Paige Turners in Upton, Derry. Yes, that's the store owner's name and the name of her great new and used bookstore right in the middle of town. And Kat, you and I had a chance to actually go there and spend some time there last week and got a look at all of the great stuff that she's got there.
You're not kidding, Brad. I found first editions of three different Paul Sheldon novels, including the hard-to-find Misery's Child. I sure wish he was still writing those.
And I got reading copies of five different Richard Stark novels, too, the ones that Thad Beaumont wrote a while back. I never much liked his literary novels, but those thrillers are just so tough and smart, and they're actually kind of scary. I really love them.
Mm-hmm. All five of Bill Denbrough's horror novels are there, new and used. I even found Gordy LaChance's book of short stories right next to three of Mike Enslin's 10 Nights and 10 Haunted series. Oh, they are so good. It's just too bad about what happened to him.
And Mike Noonan may be retired, but you can find everything from The Red Shirt Man to My Childhood Friend at Page Turner's. And I picked up a very used copy of Johnny Maranville's Vietnam novel, too. I wish he'd come back from wherever he went and get back to writing. I mean, seriously, Kat, Page has got everything put together there.
I even got two editions of Charlie the Choo-Choo. Interesting. One by Claudia Yanez Bachman and the other by Beryl Evans. Though I'm not sure what the difference is.
Who knows? They're so cute. And did you check out the bargain bin out in front of the store?
No, I missed it.
Oh, it's so much good stuff. I found a James Eric Gardner book of poetry and Roberta Anderson's Hangtown and a copy of Wesley Smith's Hot Tub Honeys. I mean, I swear, I ran out of money before I ran out of things to buy.
And did you see that whole shelf of Ben Mears books?
No, I didn't.
Oh my God, we are going back. Let's go.
And you, everybody who's listening to this ad, you should go too. It's Page Turners in Upton, Derry, open 7 days a week and twice on Sundays. Every book you've ever heard of, and a couple that were never actually written. So call us over hours, but don't expect anyone to answer. Paige is a busy woman.
And once again, thanks to Paige Turners for sponsoring this episode of The Dark Multiverse of Stephen King.
And then there was the TV series.
Of The Mist.
Of The Mist.
Oh, okay. Do we really need to go into this?
Well, a lot of you just had to stay.
You, all right, so just...
When I first heard that they were doing
right
a miniseries mm-hmm. of The Mist... I thought it was kind of a cool idea.
I thought it was a very cool idea.
I thought that, and then I heard almost immediately that it wasn't going to be the supermarket story.
Right, that, and I got excited just like I
yeah,
got, well,
kind of, very much
with
like Castle
Rock.
Exactly, we're going to do a Stephen King universe thing. Mm-hmm. Clearly, if this mist hit all of this town, the name of which
right.
just went out of my head. Obviously, there are people trapped in houses.
Where the federal market is. Bridgeton.
Bridgeton.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Yeah, we just did the damn ad.
Yeah. Sorry.
Bridgeton. There are other places in Bridgeton. So that we know how people reacted in the infernal fields. How did they react in the other parts of town?
I was excited about that.
Yeah.
And I was
so
really excited.
We entered watching
like
this
that.
Thing mm-hmm. with the idea that...
We were doing cartwheels, jumping jacks. We were even doing it like one push-up a day to get prepped
right.
for this.
Yeah, we would have a chance to see Stephen King done right on television.
Yeah.
Given the new liberal standards on cable and the rest, this would be a
if you consider, you know, It or The Stand or anything like that, where it's like, wow, I couldn't believe they got away with doing those things at that time. You know, when they came out, I was very excited about they'll push the boundaries.
ABC and CBS movies, that either originals or King adaptations, whether it was The Stand or Salem's Lot or the original stuff, was watered down from its original form because you couldn't do that on network TV. Now you could. So we thought, great.
We were so excited.
And even the first episode or two, though, it was clearly nothing related to. And
the actors were very good. The main people that you'll know and love. The main, you know, like the lady that gets naked.
No Easter eggs, no references, with the exception of Miss Carmody.
Miss Carmody was the one who was
killed
off
in the first episode.
It was lame.
In a completely different, you know.
So Brad and I did this stupid fucking fuck you, Brad, and fuck The Mist, whoever did this. It's like everything was fine until they decided they were going to do a second season, and then everything went downhill, and it immediately went downhill. And I told Brad I would kick his ass in the parking lot after school if it ended up like that. And what happened after the final Mist episode happened, Brad? Where did we go?
Yeah, we went out in the parking lot and you kicked the shit out of everyone.
That's right. I sure did.
It was really kind of remarkable to see.
It was sad.
I've seen this happen once before in recent times, which was, I don't really like American Horror Story very much. I can't even tell you why. I just don't like it. But the one that I did kind of like was the one set in the girls' school.
The Coven one.
Yeah, the Coven, exactly.
Okay.
And I thought the first 5 or 6 episodes of that were really pretty cool. It was building towards a nice kind of a big ending. But you could tell the moment
that Steven
they
got X.
word that they were making a pilot, it was going to be an open-ended series. It was not going to end at the end of that year as others had. And that pilot was made and ultimately was not picked up. So it did end. And the last half of that one-year arc is crap. All the great stories they set up in the first half don't get done. Everything falls apart.
I don't know why they thought Coven would be a better one. The hotel, in my opinion, of American Horror Story was the best one. And ever since that, I'm in love with Lady Gaga. I just liked her as a person before, but I never really gave a shit one way or the other. And I'll tell you, now I'm obsessed with that woman.
But the same thing happened in The Mist, which is it was seemed to be building towards a certain confrontation.
Had they finished the arc, it would have been.
The people in the mall. And then a couple other players in between.
And then the sewers. And exactly. If they would have finished that arc and then gone on, they would have had a great season two.
But halfway through, they clearly lost interest
in
the church.
They were too busy jacking it, thinking that they were getting a second season. How could they fix this season to make it go into another season instead of ending this arc, starting a whole new storyline? They could have done it from another town.
Yeah, and there were three locations. There were the guys in the church. There were these guys that kept moving around out there. Went from the police
They could have had the
Arrowhead people in the mall.
Yeah, they could have had the Arrowhead project on the other side of the mountain.
Right.
And what was going on with those people and the other cities and the other towns around it.
They could even have ended the first season with, okay, this is now resolved. Us few survivors, we're going to the Arrowhead project. Fuck you.
Yeah,
that
yes.
That would have been okay, too.
I would have been cool with that because we had loved Mia. And but seeing her and the guy leave, it was awesome.
Halfway through this 10
They basically
arc,
spit in our face. And then the season finale,
they
dick slapped us.
They burn down the church. They take everybody that's out wandering around and put them in the mall.
Yeah.
And then the last 4 or 5 episodes, we've got, you know,
them fighting against each other when they're all on the same side. It's like they couldn't find each other in the friggin', you know what I mean? Like Mia couldn't find the guy and they couldn't find this person. And it was just,
it was a mess.
It made no sense. It was a fucking
and
mess.
And the characters that acted in a certain
it
way
makes
in
me
the
so
first
mad.
4 or 5, like the survivors from the church, including Francis Conroy. Who's
Francis Conroy.
Suddenly
got
loses,
nickety.
Completely loses all of the character that she's been allowed to build here.
Yeah.
And just becomes this weird, crazy woman who dies ignominiously at the end with no...
With
why
no
did
point. Why did we spend 10 weeks on her? And why did we spend 10 weeks caring about what her relation and connection or non, what made it that she was so special or not? I mean, just give us any fucking answer. Just don't spit in our faces.
And it's interesting, in rewatching the movie and rereading the novella, I realized one
of
the gotta
strongest
get back
to that,
things
I need
about
that bad
these
taste
two
in my mouth.
Is that these characters act like real people in a consistent way.
Yeah.
Some surprise you in being better than you would have expected them to be. Others turn out to go crazy. Like the box boy guy who turns out to be a tough guy.
Not Norm. Oh, wait. The one.
The older guy with the glasses who's actually the mad scientist for the Marvel movies.
Not Ollie Weeks.
Yeah, Ollie.
Ollie?
Yeah. And he starts out being just kind of a wimpy
little
guy.
Oh, he's super. And then he turns into a little badass because, he knows how to shoot
those are
and things like that. I like that.
Those are revelations of character.
I agree.
And they're great. but nobody
it's
actually...
It's development and unfolding.
In a logical manner. You don't set that character and then suddenly, oh, no, wait, they're good, they're not
right.
Good. The problem with the Myst series is that's exactly what happens. They set all these characters on certain paths to be certain kinds of people. And then halfway through, you give that all up. They start acting completely illogically.
And for no reason. If they would have said, if they would have at least put in the season finale, and it was all a dream, or, oh, suddenly there was a gas leak. I would have hated it, but I would...
all the people. Okay, I don't like that idea because it gives you...
But it would have been better than the bullshit that they did.
Yeah. So by the time we get to the last three or four episodes, we're hating having to watch it. We're hating having to
talk about it. It was a chore. Yeah. It was a fucking chore.
And it was a mess. So all we can say to you guys out there
so
is...
So you would have been hearing this podcast a year and a half ago, a year ago, something like that, if The Myst wouldn't have sucked balls as badly as it sucked balls, because we were totally on top of weekly doing our thing. And I think the most fun part of it was afterwards we would have talks and we'd riff on everything like we do now.
Yeah, but so we turn off the mics. Now we don't turn the mics on until we start those.
Yes. So
we get the first part where we're sitting and watch the thing together.
Yeah.
Because all you'd hear is snatches of TV dialogue and us going, oh, fuck. Oh, no.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, no, are you fucking kidding me? And then my husband comes in. Are you guys okay? Oh, you're watching. Okay. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? He thinks we're fighting, I guess, again, after the
We were watching one of the later episodes of Castle Rock a few minutes ago. And she was surprised. You yelled, shut the fuck up. And her husband, just having come home from work, comes in the door and says, you okay? Everything all right? Yeah, we're not fighting. I'm not trying to kill her.
I'm like, I'm murdering Brad. Don't worry about it. Go away. Nothing to see here. These are not the droids you're looking for.
But if you want to read, I think, some of the best writing King's ever done, read the novella of The Myst, which is available everywhere. Or, and if you want to see one of the best adaptations of his horror stuff, not his thriller or suspense thing, The Myst is still
a
really strong movie.
It's great.
And, you know, we hope Frank Darabont does come back from the Myst himself and starts doing stuff again.
I think he's on Tupac Island.
And maybe. And meanwhile, The Myst series is on Netflix.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Do not waste your time.
Please don't waste those hours of your life. I mean, Brad and I bonded a lot with all the ass kicking that went on. But I'll tell you what.
It's true.
It was a certain waste of our time. And I just pity the fool.
So, yeah, so we loved it. And
we love each other still. We went through hell and back.
We're watching The Myst movie again right now. Mm-hmm. And we're going to turn out the recorder and watch the rest of this damn movie because it is so cool.
It's so good.
And I'm really sorry they had to kill that kid.
Oh, I am too. I mean, Billy, I mean, I'm just going to murder you soon. You have no idea.
And the thing is,
he would have never done that in a million years. Not even after he finds his dead wife, which they don't even address in the book. They don't address it because they even get to the house. At least they show Stephanie webbed up.
Yeah,
that's
true.
She's webbed the fuck up. That's good in the book. I like that they did that.
But they couldn't get near it.
They couldn't get near it. There was a fallen trees, and they could hear so much stuff in the woods that they couldn't get to it.
Yeah.
But in the movie, they show Stephanie webbed up, so she's dead.
I think it's that same compression. You have to, even in a novella, much less a novel, you can have red herrings and things that you don't follow through on. In a movie, if you're going to introduce that character early on,
you have to finish where that goes.
It up. You
see, now Mrs. Carmody, when she's talking to Amanda in the bathroom, is one of the creepiest things. Women, we do strange things in the bathroom. We have weird kinds of conversations and things like that. But if anybody talked to me, like, she even started the conversation with Amanda. If somebody started that shit, I would just deck the bitch and walk out. I'd just be like, I don't have time for this. Like, I cannot right now.
The other thing I find interesting, there's an echo of this and in both the movie and book of Cujo. Which
see, look, her hair is down now. Okay, yeah, now Carmody's hair is down. Now she's starting to look more frazzled a little bit. Not much.
The kids. In this, the kid is kind of weak.
Billy
is weak. I mean, he cries a lot, and he starts to suck his thumb. He paralyzes almost immediately.
He does.
So when he does show a little bravery here towards the end, before they leave, it's different. And the boy in Cujo, both in the book and the movie, is just a sniveling little creep the whole time.
Yes.
That's not normally when you see these things. The kids are always the ones that are kind of, you know, the brave ones. And they bring dad out of it or they keep things going or whatever.
Right.
Those guys are different. They're the more typical sort of...
You mean as adults in real life?
No, even when they were kids. Oh, they had bravery and kind of, you know, took care of themselves and were... The kind of stereotypical super brave kids, where in Cujo and in The Myst, they are far more real life typical kids that are whining,
super sensitive, and
and collapse at this stress almost immediately.
I thought the little boy Billy, I thought that other than being tired and being worn out, like he had already accepted his mother's death faster than David had. I think that's why he was so tired and he cried a little bit, but I think that he immediately accepted that they were never going to see his mother again.
Interesting that those two kids remind me of each other, and it does make me wonder what
his age the boys were.
They seem to have come out okay. And I have another King story, but we'll end this one with, just because I think it's fun.
Go for it.
This was from My Favorite Murder.
Our girl.
Someone wrote into her, and it was a person who works as a librarian in a prison in Maine.
Yeah.
And not Shawshank or anything like it.
I
wanted to let them know that that they have a very nice prison library there with lots of books and magazines, and it's really
nice.
Please
tell me it's called Brooks.
And if you go there, you will see a small plaque on the wall that says it was dedicated by Stephen and Tabitha King.
Because
they wanted these guys to have a chance to read any of the books they wanted to read. They never talked about it. It's never appeared in their list of places they support.
They
just very quietly put the money together.
That makes me so happy, the Brooks Heartland Library, but it's actually the Stephen King Library. Yeah, that's very cool.
I
didn't listen to that episode yet today, I think.
That's a brand new one. He's just a good guy.
Of course he's a good guy.
And he doesn't make a big deal about a lot of these little
things. No, he doesn't. He doesn't make a big deal out of the big stuff that everybody else does. He wants to be as invisible as possible.
And when he does nice little stuff like that, it should get mentioned.
So we are mentioning it now because Stephen King, we love you.
We do. And we'll be back next time with something else.
Announcements
in
show notes.
Also on Twitter at Dark Multipod or on our Instagram at Dark Multipod. We announce what we're talking about next before we do, so you get a chance to kick up.
Because we want to play with you and we get to play with us.
Yep.
Let's do cartwheels.
Let us know what we're doing. So
That too. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Okay, the Castle Rock Skeleton Key for episode 3, Local Color.
This one was a fun episode, I thought.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay, so the kid is staring at a picture of Warden Lacey. I want you to read this part because I'm about to yell at you. Yeah. Okay. All right, start over.
So the first thing is, in Shawshank, we're in the cafeteria, and the kid gets stopped from trying to walk out by seeing a picture of Warden Lacey on the wall. And it goes real fast, but right next to Warden Lacey is a picture of Warden Sam Norton from Shawshank Redemption. And it's actually a picture of the actor Bob Dutton.
No fucking way. Okay, Brad, I'm so pissed at you for not telling me this. And I've seen the fucking episode and I did not notice Warden motherfucking Norton.
Yeah, just for a second, Bob Dutton's right there.
Yeah,
I thought that was a pretty cool. No mentions ever made.
Oh my God. Okay, so when we're done with this, I'm putting that part on because I need to see it. I mean, really, how dare you keep that spoiler from me? Because that's something that, like, I would have just said, like, okay, for future reference, just say something to me like, hey, Kat, you know, just saying, when it shows up on the pictures on the wall and it shows the warden that's going on, just take an extra good look. Take a good look. Because I was so busy looking at that motherfucker's tie, I didn't even notice Warden Norton. That's terrible. They did it on purpose, the tricksters.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, so, okay, so the part that I also liked about this episode, the kids in the trial looked a whole lot like the kids in the masks in The Children of the Corn.
Yeah, no other connection.
So good.
We don't really know if Children of the Corn is even in this multiverse, but just the reference, the visual.
And
reference.
The fact that she's the only adult there and he's like, we're going to take you to court and kill you. Yeah. Like, we're taking you guilty, we're going to kill you. And they're like, yeah. And he's like, you got to go out the back door when you leave.
Yeah. And just before that, when Molly Bloom is trying to get drugs, she goes to her usual connection, and that kid says, I'm all out, you know, after one of these guys. That kid, you have to actually look on, like, IMDb or whatever to see the full name of that character, because she never says it.
Seriously.
Out loud. Yeah, and his full name is listed as Dean Merrill, which
would, oh, my God.
Yeah, another Merrill. And Ace has already been mentioned in here. I mean, we know that.
Do we know about any illegitimate kids that Ace Merrill may have had?
No,
I mean,
but if you look up the Ace, there are lots of Merrills mentioned, a lot of different stories. And Ace himself mentions that he has a brother, and his father was a well-known son of a bitch in town. He had a brother, and so it's
so maybe they're fuck stars.
It could be his son or his nephew, or something else. And remember, Ace died way back in
91.
And
so he couldn't have a kid that age because that would be about 11 years younger than Henry, and Henry's 39, and that kid's in high school. So, yeah, okay.
That kid could have a
sorry, I'm trying to get all into it.
And, no, but it's true. But, yeah, we're talking about roughly 30 years, give or take. That kid's not 30.
Yeah.
But he could be this, either like the brother's kid or...
So or if they...
We do know that there are Merrills in Haven, there are Merrills in Derry, there are Merrills in Castle Rock.
Everywhere where there's an asshole, you'll find yourself a Merrill.
So chances are that Merrill, too, is just another little throw-off.
Little Merrill throw-off, another sperm that got in there.
We may never see that kid again, but they all mean something. So it was a pretty light week for
Ben. But it was fun. I love when she goes off. You know, that's all. That's all I'm going to say about that. When she goes off and knows things, the newscast, and she stands out for herself. I love that.
Yep.
I loved it.
The actress is amazing in this thing. She is.
Her boobs are amazing, too.
Yeah, you do like her boobs.
Her boobs, because here's the thing.
So did the costume designer.
Definitely. The costume designer makes it flatters where you don't have to worry about that little bit of arm fat on your underarm or your outer arm fat or anything like that. And it just covers all that so gently while making a nice cleavage where you just want to put your, it's like a pillow.
Though she's, you know, very pretty.
She is pretty.
And has wonderful eyes. She's, you know, a bigger woman. She's not some cute little sex bot thing at all.
She's no Jackie Torrance.
Right, she's no Jackie Torrance. And we do know for a fact now that Skarsgård's butt's pretty good, too.
We think, unless it's a butt double, I gotta look that up. We gotta look that up. Because he's so skinny. How can he have such a great, amazing ass?
Well,
you never know.
This is completely inappropriate.
It always is. All right. This had nothing to do with the skeleton key, but welcome to our minds. And thanks for joining us. See you next week.
And that's it for The Mist. We give you links to all the versions in the show notes at www.darkmultipod.com. And as always, please join us on Twitter, where we're known as @darkmultipod, or on Instagram, where we're also known as @darkmultipod. Or drop us a note with suggestions, new information, or the unspoken secret of who really killed Laura Palmer at darkmultipod@gmail.com. We are everywhere, just like the shop. Once again, our beautiful and haunting theme and bed music is used by the generous permission of Chrysanthi Tan, a brilliant musician and composer and performer, and you can visit her website at chrysanthitan.com. That's spelled the same as chrysanthemum without the last three letters. Google it. It's a flower that looks like it's exploding. Anyway, there's a link to Chrysanthi's Patreon account on our website as well. Go patronize her. Seriously. Now. We have. As for us, you can find Brad Munson's stuff, hey, that's me, on Amazon or on Twitter and Instagram as @TheBradMunson in both places. And Kat, well, Kat lives only in the deepest shadows of the dark web. But if you turn on your laptop and say her name three times, she'll appear in your bathroom mirror and scratch your damn eyes out. So don't do that. Trust me. Feel free to go on over to iTunes to like us, rate us, and review us in the most upbeat and positive way, of course. We do the same for you. And spread the word to one and all on social media or with actual tongue and lip flapping about our cool little podcast. It's the only way we'll grow up big and strong. Anyway, we'll be back here next week, and we'd love to hear from you before that. And until then, have a good one.
But anyways, more writer's tears. Tastes so good. Tears.
I thought I'd enjoy writer's tears. I've been so many of my own.